Hello, and welcome to the Book Speaks podcast, where the book speaks for itself. I'm your host, Benjamin Douglas, and this is the show where each week I read a chapter from a different indie author. Thanks for joining me for today's reading. Hi, everybody. Happy Friday, and welcome to episode 21 of the Book Speaks podcast, where the book speaks for itself. As always, I'm your host, Benjamin Douglas. Today is a special day. In addition to a reading today, which will come from post-apocalyptic author Boyd Craven III's novel, One Man's Opus, we're also going to have an interview with that author. Very fun. Only the second interview we've done on the show, so bear with me. But I think it went okay. And Boyd was a blast to talk to. Just a really personable, cool guy, full of lots of interesting anecdotes and good information. So I hope you enjoy that interview, and then afterwards, the reading of the first chapter from his novel, One Man's Opus. Before we get to all of that, I want to put out a plug today for one of my favorite podcasts. I was listening to it a few weeks ago. I'm talking about the Sell More Books Show, hosted by Jim Kukral and Brian Cohen. And Brian put out a call to action a few weeks ago. He said, hey, if you've been listening to the show and you're finding any value here, we'd appreciate you, any shares on social media or anywhere you like. So I thought to myself, hey, I have a show. I'll put out a plug. So this is my plug on the Book Speaks podcast for the Sell More Book Show. And in true Sell More Book Show fashion, I'm going to give you this plug in a 3-bullet-point list. So here we go.
Number 3.
Not too hot, not too cold. The scope of discussion on the Sell More Books show sits in a pleasant Goldilocks zone. Not too micro, not too macro. Whereas a great show like The Creative Pen casts a very wide scope in terms of the business, the art, and the future of publishing, and a show like the Self-Publishing Podcast gets down to the narrow nitty-gritty of specific approaches, the Sell More Books show maintains a centered scope that allows its hosts to treat all the tips and news of the week as equitably as they see fit. Which brings us to...
Number 2.
Mano y mano. While often Jim and Brian's opinions on the news are predictable in so much as that they are informed and consistent, it's pleasantly refreshing to find a show where the hosts are not afraid to disagree with each other from time to time. Unlike a panel where everyone seems to be agreeing with one voice, these two are putting the die back in dialogue when they present cogent, coherent, and opposing arguments. It doesn't happen with every story, it doesn't happen every week, but when it does happen, they don't shy away from it. And lastly, bases loaded. Maybe the best thing about listening to the Sell More Book Show is this. You're busy, I'm busy, everybody's busy, so as much as we might each have a list of 5 to 10 podcasts we want to catch every week, it just isn't feasible to do that and still get our work done. But listening to the Sell More Books show will likely keep you up to date on a lot of the interesting advice, tips, and news circulating on other shows anyway. Stories regularly feature material sourced from The Creative Pen, the Science Fiction and Fantasy Marketing Podcast, The Digital Reader, E-Reader Today, K-Boards, the 20 Books to 50K Facebook group, and others. Short on time, but want to cover all the bases? Listen to the Sell More Books show. All right, so there you have it, my 3-point plug. I am not affiliated in any official capacity. If I'm on Jim and Brian's radar at all, I'm sure it's as the tiniest, prawniest blip who comments on their show. But if you guys want to pay me, and if there's any concern for copyright infringement for doing your countdown, I think Jim would be calling the kettle black for his many sounders. So There's a joke you'll understand if you're a fan of the show. All right, without any further ado, here we go on to today's interview, followed by my reading from author Boyd Craven III. I hope you enjoy it. Stick around next week. We're going to have some fantasy. All right, thanks. Have a good day. Hi, Boyd. How are you doing today?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for agreeing not only to let me feature and read from your book on the show, but for being interviewed. Really, really awesome of you. Anyone who's listening, Boyd is just a really cool guy. I've met him on the phone now, and that's all. But he's already been very gracious, so he's one of the good ones. I'm going to begin, Boyd, as I always do, by reading your Amazon author bio, okay?
Okay.
Boyd Craven has penned over 20 books over the last 2 years, only recently deciding to take the plunge into publishing. His The World Burns series has hit the top 10 in the dystopian genre in the USA, the UK, Canada, and Australia. Boyd has made his home in Michigan with his wonderful wife and about 1 million kids, but travels to Texas to visit family as frequently as possible. He hunts and goes fishing when he's not dreaming up post-apocalyptic nightmares to put his characters through. Fear not, though, Boyd is a huge believer that in the darkest hour there is always a glimmer of hope to hold on to. In addition to being a modern-day urban farmer, Boyd belongs to a co-op selling at the local farmer's market and lately has been experimenting with living off the grid, an excellent way to research for his series, as well as torture his teenage sons. Prepare yourself by reading his books. They're a thrill ride on or off the grid. So, there we have it. That is Boyd Craven III, his Amazon author bio. And Boyd, so 2 years, 20 books.
Mm-hmm.
What's the secret, man? what are you doing that I should be doing? Because I'm like, I'm like 3 months, maybe one book.
Well, the biggest secret for me was kind of figuring out when my best time to write was. And before I went full time, for me, it was first thing in the morning. It was before the wife and kids got up for school, and it was before I had to go into work. So that's when I would start writing. And from there, you know, I kind of developed into writing sprints. A lot of people talk about those now. And so for me, you know, you try to get in between 5 and 10 writing sprints a day. So my word count goals are kind of crazy. They never used to be that high when I was not writing full time, but now they've, you know, my goals are changed a little bit.
Are you one of those 10K a dayers that I hear about?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, goodness.
My record's about 18 in a day.
Oh, good Lord.
But, you know, they talk about some guy on Nano that wrote 40K over a 24-hour period, and someone else had to come in and do like 65 or 70K in a 24-hour period. I can't do that.
Jeez.
But
see, I don't understand just how that's like physiologically possible. So on your record day, was that all typed, or did you do like dictation?
On that day, I just typed, but I've been getting a lot better with dictation. One of your former guests, Elizabeth Ann West, got me started on dictation. She's actually the one that, kept encouraging me to keep on and try a different microphone and try a different version. Sure. And, you know, until I got something that really worked for me. So now I do a combination of both.
Yeah. Do you do Dragon software for that?
I do.
Yep. Yeah. A lot of good things about that. I hear the thing. So I didn't prepare Boyd to talk to him about this at all, but now I'm just curious. The thing I always can't wrap my head around with dictation is like my narrative voice when I speak is very different than my writing voice. I just feel more comfortable writing, I guess, than talking. Mm-hmm. Was that an issue for you at all? Or did it happen pretty naturally?
It's still something hard to get through, but the way I kind of look at it is when I'm dictating, I'm kind of making a fat outline. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I get like 65%, 70% done. And then as I go through and edit, I add in more detail, more dialogue, you know?
Okay. So it almost sounds like pre-writing then, but much more, obviously. I mean, 65% of the word count is quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can, and I'm not the fastest typer in the world. If I have an outline in front of me, I think I've pushed up to 55 words a minute. But if I'm completely going by the seat of my pants, I think, you know, my average is like maybe 40 words a minute typing. But use dictation, you know, I start getting into like the 90 to 100 words per minute averages. Wow. You know what I mean? And if you math that out, you know, 100 words a minute, 60 minutes, you can really get into some big word counts. So I don't necessarily do that all the time because I'm not used to talking for an hour or two at a time. You know what I mean?
Yes. Well, I'll fess up. I'm just scared of trying it. But the numbers I'm hearing from you and other people really bear out the idea that it's worth at least trying. Mm-hmm. My goodness, 90 words a minute. That's wild.
Yeah.
Jeez. You also mentioned in your bio that you're from Michigan, and I'm from Michigan. We were talking about this a little bit before the interview. Give me one thing you really love about living in Michigan.
Verner's, Faygo, Coney Dogs.
Yes.
Nowhere else in the country can you get a good Flint-style Coney. I mean, everyone does Detroit-style Coneys, but, you know, you got to get a Flint-style Coney, or you've never lived.
Nope. There's like a meme that was going around Facebook a few years ago. There was like one for a whole bunch of different states that was like reasons Vermont is the best state in the country or whatever. And there was one for Michigan, and it was, it was like exactly what you just said. Verner's, Faygo. if y'all are listening and you don't know what Verner's and Faygo are, you have not lived.
Right.
Faygo Red Pop is, and Faygo Rock and Rye.
Yeah, Rock
are
and
like
Rye
the
is
nectar
the best.
Of the gods.
Rock and Rye and what about, Country Time ice cream together.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And Detroit-style pizza, mm-hmm. huh?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. People have this whole New York-Chicago debate. They don't even understand what pizza is,
mm-hmm.
in my humble opinion. Okay, all right, that's fair. So something I love, Boyd, about your books, the branding of them, and your Amazon author bio, is you have all these post-apocalyptic and survival preparedness stories, which, of course, must deal on some level with survival, doomsday scenarios, doomsday prepping, all of that stuff. And you also fess up to being an urban farmer and experimenting with living off the grid. You even say this is helpful for research for your stories.
Well, and I honestly never thought that kind of background would be beneficial for this kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah. So which came first here, the chicken or the egg? Were you interested in these things before you started writing in the genre, or did your reading and writing inspire you?
Actually, I used to write romance. I mean, I've actually got three more pen names. And I started writing this genre because I was sick of writing a romance story and I wanted to knock out a short story over a weekend just to clear my head. Because when you start trying to push for the bigger word counts, you know, exercising your creativity is just like, you know, running on the treadmill. If you suddenly quit running on the treadmill for a month, you know, you start losing how long you can actually get up and run. So, I got to keep everything exercised, and I wasn't just going to take time off writing. So I wrote the first episode of The World Burns. So,
and is that serialized then, The World Burns?
Yeah, I've got 11 episodes in that serial.
Awesome. So, I don't know anything about your pen names, of course. And, so feel free not to answer anything I'm about to ask you, because I don't want to out you if you don't want to be outed on any of it. But I'm curious now, is that all, self-published as well? The romance stuff?
Yes. All the romance stuff was self-published, and I've got one traditional published book coming, but it's going to be under my name. It's going to be, it's back with the editors.
A long process for traditional published.
But that one's a post-apocalyptic, a new world than what I've been doing.
Okay. Cool. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So you're going to be hybrid then?
Yes.
That's great. Yeah, good for you.
Yeah.
Good. So when you're sort of hopping genre, oh, that's fascinating. You know, I hear a lot of pros and cons about that, and I'm always attracted to that idea within sort of my little world of speculative fiction. I've been writing a lot of science fiction, but I'm also interested in fantasy, which is pretty closely related, right?
Mm-hmm.
But who's to say that sometime I won't want to also write like a contemporary thriller?
Right.
Or something that's, you know, quite a bit different. So what have you noticed? Is that helpful to you? Has there been a real struggle writing hopping genre?
There isn't a struggle for me getting into a different genre. But it does kind of dilute what people know you for a little bit. Like a cozy mystery reader isn't necessarily going to want to read, you know, like my Devil Dog trilogy, where it's really down and dirty and gritty and, you know, deals with some pretty heavy issues. You know, they want a light, fun read, and, you know, there's certain expectations. So, I mean, I can mentally change gears, but I can't necessarily sell it.
Yeah. Hence the pen names.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that makes a lot of sense. Good. The problem for me is what'll happen is the idea to, like, take a break from science fiction and write like a zombie story or something is really attractive, because somehow what I've been working on begins to feel like work.
Right.
You know, whereas like this other new exciting thing is like, ooh, that's fresh, that's new. And then what happens inevitably is I end up with, you know, a lot of started stories that don't go anywhere.
Yeah.
The pitfall for me. But it sounds like you, especially with your full-time writing and your word count at this point, are a seasoned veteran at seeing it through. So
hopefully.
Good for you. Yeah, I should hope so.
I was going to say, I still have a hard drive full of half-finished stuff, too.
Yeah.
It happens to all of us, I think.
Yep. Are those all like from the good old days, or is that still happening? Like, are you still starting things and abandoning them?
Oh, I still do that.
Yeah. Oh, good. You just validated me.
Oh, yeah. You know, one afternoon I was kicking back and the wife and the kids were somewhere and I had the house to myself, which was really weird. And, you know, I put on a baseball game and grabbed a beer and I just started writing like something that HBO would have, like a Dexter thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, and whenever I get bored or burn out a little bit, I'll open that file back up and I'll start, you know, writing about that guy again. Or, you know, I wrote One Man's Opus in a time like that, because that isn't my usual style of post-apoc.
Yeah. I noticed that. We're going to talk about that in just a minute, because that is the book from which I'll be reading.
Okay.
Good. Before we do, I want to ask you what you've observed about your readers. And sort of a follow-up to that, if someone is interested in writing in post-apoc, what are the potential readers interested in? What sort of things might a writer want to avoid? And this is pretty open-ended, so in terms of, I don't know, tone, tropes, character choices, locations, anything.
Well, for me, I think my demographic, in general, there's more female readers than male readers. So I've got a I mean, in general.
Okay. I thought you meant in post-apocalyptic.
Well, and even post-apocalyptic, that still holds true.
Mm-hmm.
The numbers are closer to being equal, but it's still a little overwhelmingly female. The age ranges are usually between, you know, I'd say 30 and 65 on average.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's a really big, wide-open demographic. Most of my stuff has a little bit of a religious or a faith-based undertone. It's not, like, really stated out there in your face type of thing, but, you know, it's enough to where if people are comfortable talking about religion, then they're going to recognize it right away. And if people don't want to read it, it's not going to bug them.
Can I go on a rabbit trail through really quick? Is it enough that you've ever tried to market toward, like, the inspirational category? You know what I'm talking about? Like, post-apocalyptic inspirational would be a really interesting and, I think, on the surface, mind-boggling idea.
Well, going into the post-apocalyptic and dystopian categories, those are some of the most competitive ones out there right now. So, you know, if it fits in the subcategory, I mean, I'd try it. Mine aren't always inspirational. Maybe by the time you get done with the story arc, it is, but even in my cleaner stories on my post-apocalyptic, it's, you know, a little bit not very inspirational in the beginning.
Understandably so. Good. What should people avoid if they're going to write? I know, again, wide demographic, but what's is there? Let me ask you more, maybe more anecdotally. Have you noticed anything in your own writing that came out and was just poorly received? Any element of storytelling or writing or even marketing on your part at all that just really didn't go over well with your intended audience?
Yes. In one of my stories, everyone thought two people were going to get together, and I'd been slowly directing the story, and it's the Devil Dog trilogy. So without giving away the end of the book, they thought so-and-so was going to end up with so-and-so, and they didn't. And come to find out, there was a lot of fans pulling for the underdog that I didn't realize was the underdog in my own writing.
Yeah, you frustrated their HEA. Oh, no!
Right? Well, and then, you know, I'm one of those guys that remembers tragedies, and not every story has a perfectly happy ending, so...
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I remember... So, I'm a Harry Potter fan, as you know, probably most people are, I imagine. Mm-hmm. And I didn't start reading the books until I'd seen like the first three films, just because of the way it lined up with my own life and childhood and stuff. And I remember after the first two films being absolutely convinced that when the kids grew up, there would be a romance, and it would be between Harry and Hermione. So, as I read the books then and sort of got caught up and was like, what's going on with Ron and Hermione? Mm. I was really frustrated. But then, of course, a couple of years ago, J.K. Rowling came out and said, oh, it should have been Harry and Hermione. And I've always kind of thought it would be really fun, but cause a real storm among fans if, you know, in another decade or two, she, like, revised the whole series.
That or she... Or Harry and Ginny got a divorce and
oh Ron yeah and sure down the road split and yeah, that'd be a little more like her casual vacancy in tone, I think.
Right.
Be interesting. All right, that's a fair answer. That's a fair answer, and thank you for skirting a spoiler to give us that.
Yeah. And you asked about tropes. There's a lot of different stuff in post-apocalyptic that. You know, and this is just my own words, and I'll break them down real quick. You have, like, prepper porn, basically. You know, you get into very intimate detail on guns and equipment and supplies, and you get some that are more on list building, and you get others that are more, you know, I like to call mine, you know, education and entertainment, because I try to give real tricks and tips in the stories. And like with me, I don't, you know, it doesn't have to be a Colt Gold Cup 1911 chambered in a 45, you know, and everything's Magnum. I just say he picked up the gun. So
yeah.
I know about guns, but you get one little detail wrong in this genre and, you know, you have fans that are very dedicated to the knowing all this stuff. And I just like to say
horses and fantasy.
Yeah.
Don't write about horses unless you know horses.
Exactly.
Yeah. Have you been contacted by any fans who, you know, sent you a picture and look, Boyd, I built the shelter that you described in, in episode 3.
I get
anything like that?
I get all kinds of crazy emails. So the short answer is yes.
Okay. But he loves his fans. He loves his fans.
Right. Well, oh no. It's just, no. I don't know if it's because it's, you know, sometimes some of my stuff touches on politics or, you know, I get some really good responses and I get some really scary responses. So.
Sure.
Anytime you involve politics, and especially during the last 2 years, you're going to get a reaction.
Yep. Yep. It's just getting crazier all the time. The rhetoric. Mm-hmm. Between anyone who disagrees with anything, which is everybody. So, yeah. Well, I think we're getting a glimpse of what your sort of genre is usually like. So now would you tell us a little bit about One Man's Opus? That's the book I'll be reading the first chapter of on the show today. Tell us, what's it like? What makes it different from your other books or other books in the genre? What's the deal?
The pacing on this one is a little bit slower than some of my other books. And it's not like the world completely ended. The apocalypse in this was kind of a buildup of civil unrest, and, you know, things get really hairy for the main characters when, you know, there was a cop that was ambushed in the city that they live right near started rioting, and, you know, that was their inciting event to pull the trigger and bug out. But it's not... But it's like one man's journey from, you know, and you're going to read this, and I totally Mary Sued myself, if you know what that means.
Yes, I do.
Okay, so people are going to read this and say, are you talking about yourself, or did you kind of fictionalize talking about yourself? And the answer to both questions is yes to both. So,
yes.
So that's a little bit different because, you know, it's a story about a writer who meets a girl and a dog. And he's been on his own for so long, and, you know, he's learning about prepping and getting involved in stuff and totally not looking for romance, but it smacks him right in the face. So and I don't try to tone down the romance. I mean, there's kissing and there's a couple jokes, but there's, you know, there's nothing.
For shame.
Right. But it's not like I deliberately wrote it to be a romance. It just kind of happened. And
yeah, sure.
It's about bringing people together and, you know, after you bug out, you still have issues. So there's still problems people have to, overcome, you know, just when you think you made it safe to this little town where you've set up your sanctuary, you know, little towns have big problems too. So
yeah,
that's kind of,
have you thought at all that your other persona as a romance author, inspired this at all, or did you, cause you said you didn't set out to write a romance.
No.
This
is going to sound, this is kind of a weird, crazy chain of events. I was writing, I don't even remember what story it was at the time, but over Christmas time, I got really sick. And while that was going on and, you know, I'm going through like two rounds of antibiotics to clear my lungs out, and we had a Jack Russell that was almost 19 years old and she passed away, and it was really horrible. And, you know, we put her to rest, and then our big dog quit eating, and we went and took him to the vet thinking, you know, he's just really sad and what can we do to boost him up? And we found out he had cancer, and they gave him like a month to live. You know, it was so advanced, they couldn't do anything with it. So they said, you know, give him some of this medicine, and, you know, I had planned on coming back in about a week or so, and he didn't last that long. He waited long enough for my older son to come home and say goodbye, and then he literally died at his feet, you know, after getting pet. And so that all happened, and I'm just like, I couldn't focus, I couldn't concentrate on what I wanted to write, because the dogs are literally like fuzzy kids for us, on top of our own kids. I know they're going to hate hearing that over a blog, but yes, they are kids. They are your brothers and sisters.
Yep.
So I thought, I'll write Beastly the Wonder Mutt into a story, and that's Opus. The only thing, well, there's only one thing in the book that my dog did not do for real, and it's at the very end. So.
When he talks.
Oh, yeah. Well, he had his own way. He had his own way of talking. Like, you could, and you'll read it in the book too, but like, you know, if I pinned his ears backwards and, you know, asked him if he wanted to walk around in a tutu and paint his toenails, he'd, you know, sneeze. And the sneeze sounded like he was cussing me out. And he meant it like that. And if you said something he liked, he would make like a chuffing noise. And he had different growling vocalizations. You know, one of them's like, I don't like this, or hey, look at this. And then, you know, if he actually started barking, you knew there was a big issue, because he was silent other than, you know, those little vocalizations. And those were mostly just between one or two people. So
that is a different story, but I think it's quite lovely. So in a way, this is sort of an epithet or a sort of an ode.
Mm-hmm.
Then. to your past pet. That's lovely.
Yeah.
Okay. That does make it quite different. Tell us a little bit about your writing life, just to pivot here.
Okay.
You were writing full-time, and you said that before that you were writing in the mornings, mm-hmm. and now you do sprints throughout the day, right? Mm-hmm. So give me like a rundown. Like, what's a typical day for Boyd like in terms of writing time, marketing time, how you're balancing other things?
Well, I usually get up about 5 and I sprint. And this depends. I get up about 5 to start writing, and I usually get in 5 or 6 sprints, which are 25 mm-hmm. minutes of just plain drafting and then 5 minute between breaks. And then, mm-hmm. you know, I'll have breakfast or lunch and I'll get ready for the day. And then, you know, I'll hop on Facebook for a while and, you know, chat with people and check the news and stuff like that. And sure. I mean, 5 or 6 sprints, you know, that puts you about 8 or 9 o'clock in the day. And then, you know, I do that again a few more times, and then I break for lunch and go downstairs and, you know, play with the baby a little bit. And when Timmy's in school, well, you know, not as much, but when sure, he's home, sure. you know, it's like digging frogs and snakes out of his pocket and taking care of the gross thing he brought inside and freaked right. his mom out about, because, you know.
Yeah, now I'm gonna interrupt you to ask an intrusive question, so if it's too okay. personal, don't be afraid to say no, but I have a baby right uh-huh. now, a 10-month-old son, and I teach in the evenings at a community college when school's in session, but right now in the summer, my job is daddy daycare, right?
Mm-hmm.
And amazingly, even though I'm home all day, I find it really difficult to find both time and energy and motivation all at the same time mm-hmm. to write, you know, because I just, taking care of a baby is taking care of a baby.
Well, they still have to sleep and they have to nap.
Yes. Yes, they do. is your situation similar at all? Or do you have like some other, like, is mom at home? Do you have daycare? What's going on?
Nope. My wife's at home.
Okay. All right.
Yep. She,
there you go then.
Yeah. But I mean, if I come downstairs, you know, immediately dad's home. Now it's time to catch up. Yes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
But
yeah.
for me to, you know, I took over one of the bedrooms upstairs and I put a lock on the door, and you know, when the door's locked and I'm not answering the knocks, you know, it means either I'm playing video games too loud and I can't hear them, or I'm writing.
Either way, dad's at work.
Yep.
Yep, good for you.
And I totally, legitimately will say video games is, you know, a great tool for feeding your muse when you need to just, you know, coast a little bit and let your mind process so you can get onto something.
Yeah.
So during my day when I do stuff like that too, I do take time to kind of relax a little bit and just think, you know.
Yeah.
Play a little Titanfall, play a little Fallout.
There you go. Yeah. For me, it tends to be like the menial tasks, just like, well, I listen to podcasts, for example, while I'm like washing baby bottles or doing lawn work. But that sometimes that's also just like time for me to mentally process, and I get a lot of ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Well, Boyd, what's coming up next for you on the horizon? Do you have any upcoming releases you'd like to let us know about? Any big promotions? What are you working on? Give us a spiel here. What's the plug?
I have got a Western romance that I'm going to put out under B.L. Craven. It'll be
an open name, B.L. Craven. All right.
It's going to be an open secret, but it's not in my usual style. It is a romance written from a guy's perspective. It's going to it's gonna sink like an anchor, but that's okay. I wrote it.
Is that the one that's traditional? Traditionally
no.
published?
No.
No, okay.
The traditional published one is called Outside the Fire.
Right. That's under your own name. Yeah.
Yep, that one will be under my own name. I finished an urban fantasy, and it's going through an alpha read right now, and I'm playing around with the title, but the working title is called Runesight.
Runesight.
That one's done, and that's in the process, and now I'm on the sequel to One Man's Opus.
Good luck with the urban fantasy. Urban fantasy is such a funny thing, because it seems like every couple of years everyone comes on the scene and says, urban fantasy is dead, it's dead, it's over. But seems to me like it's alive and well, man. Seems like it's really hot right now.
I mean, you get a new Shannon Mayer, a new Jim Butcher, or a new Kim Harrison book out, and then all of a sudden it's revitalized, you know?
Yeah. Just like post-apocalyptic, every time there's a new season of The Walking Dead, you know? Mm-hmm. Just everyone needs it, well, whether they're zombies or not.
And they said they're ending that, by the way, so...
No! Yeah.
I know.
No! Oh, you just ruined my day.
Sorry, man.
That's all right. I haven't seen the latest season anyway because we don't have, well, we do have cable actually right now, but I just don't really, just don't watch it.
Yeah.
I'm a Netflix guy, you know.
How about Stranger all right, Things cool. then?
Oh, Stranger Things. Oh, yeah. I'm super excited about Stranger Things. Is that what you said?
Yep. I love that.
Yes. I actually, you know, I got to say, totally off topic here, but I think Netflix and Hulu and Amazon are all putting out really cool original content right now. Like, as far as just storytelling is concerned,
mm-hmm.
I just binged, what is that new Jason Bateman show on Netflix where he's a drug dealer? Ozarks, where he's a money launderer, okay. Not a drug dealer. Yeah, Ozark. Go check out Ozark. If you like dark, it's really dark.
Yeah.
Like, it's really gritty. But,
Well, their success on having their own original series has kind of pushed me a little bit. I'm going to be working with someone to convert my World Burns episodes mm-hmm. because they're perfect for one-hour episodes, and most seasons of stuff on Netflix and Amazon Prime are 11 episodes in a season. So now that the stories are finished.
So you're going to try to get an option with one of those providers? Is that what you're saying?
Or go direct.
Okay.
Because you can actually pitch direct, and if they like it, and it would be, you know, this is a crazy thought on my end, but Amazon knows my sales numbers because I'm, you know, selling that through Amazon, so.
Yeah.
And post-apocalyptic shows are pretty hot.
They are, yeah.
So, I don't know. It's a crazy idea. And then a lot of my books, except for like One Man's Opus, a lot of my novels tie back into that main world for The World Burns, so... You know, this is my crazy idea. If I can get a TV series made, then there's like movies that are eventually someday in theory in my head if anyone ever finds out who I really am.
And even, I mean, even if side things didn't happen, if the TV series got made,
mm-hmm.
then people would like it and they would buy the rest of your books.
Hopefully. I mean, isn't that like kind of the ultimate dream?
Part of it. It's pretty important. It's the part that puts a roof over the head. So yeah, I'd say it's pretty important. Cool. Well, thank you, Boyd, again, so much for being here. This is Boyd Craven III. Is there anything else you want to say to our listeners before I let you go for the day?
Can find me on Facebook, or I've got a website, boydcraven.com. And I generally answer emails, but, you know, if you send me scary stuff or threats, I usually don't answer those. I just...
I can't imagine why.
Right.
Yeah. Fair enough. Don't send him scary stuff or threats. Good. And I'll link, of course, as I always do, to your website and your Amazon author page in the show notes as well. Yeah. All right. Cool. Well, thanks again so much for being here. It was a pleasure to talk to you. Best of luck with the urban fantasy. I really hope that your pitch goes well. I hope you follow through and get that done because that's exciting.
Yeah.
Best of luck with everything.
Thank you very much.
One Man's Opus, a survival and preparedness story by Boyd Craven III. Chapter 1. I never thought to myself, I want to grow up to be a prepper. It just sort of happened. It all started with a research project. With the presidential election ramping up, gun sales were skyrocketing, and the media had been bemoaning the fact that now it was the liberal left who was buying up hardware. I don't do politics. But I saw enough irony in the party who wanted more gun control buying up guns. Most of my research was done on the internet, which was fine, because that's where I was going to post my article. See, that's what I do. I write articles for blogs, websites, online newspapers, and sometimes I even publish my books on Amazon and with other online retailers. It allows me to live a quiet, secluded life. Well, mostly. But this time, because of my search history, I caught sight of another article about preppers. I'd seen stuff on preppers, and even followed the TV show, and laughed at all the right-wing loons who were gearing up with body armor, chemical and biological gear, and made special harnesses for their dogs. But this article suggested to me that maybe prepping wasn't just all beans, bullets, and band-aids. It was written by a homesteader in Tennessee, and it actually sounded more like what my grandma used to preach when I was a kid. I used to hate gardening with her, till it was time to make the good stuff, like applesauce with Red Hots, or candied pears, cherries, or raspberry concoctions. But grandma's rule was always at least three. One for you, one for me, one for later. The one for later was always marked with a wax pen on top of the canning jar and put in a dark cupboard in the basement. Still, in reading that article, I suddenly understood why my grandma had put the food away like she had. When my dad was laid off after a car accident, grandma brought over a carload of boxes. I'd had to carry them in, and they were heavy as all get out. Those boxes contained the final third. See, what I had misunderstood about prepping, it isn't about if TSHTF. It's when TSHTF and how people react to it. It doesn't have to be a giant meteor of death, a zombie apocalypse, an EMP, or a gas attack by terrorists. It could be something as simple as losing a job, or being unable to work because somebody was still healing. That food let the unemployment cover my parents' bills for the month my dad was healing, and he found another job right away. I'd forgotten that lesson until now, but it made sense. It all made sense. That's why, after I wrote that article, I started assessing what it is I was really doing with my life. I was in my late 20s, single, extremely introverted, and happy to be alone or camping somewhere by myself. That camping somewhere idea is what got me started. And I'd like to thank Rick Carpenter for coming on our show on Blog Talk Radio. "Thank you, Julia," I replied, and clicked the end call on Skype. It was the third interview I'd done this month. Book sales were suddenly doing good, and apparently writing about werewolves and romance was a great merging of genres. The fact that I was a guy writing it should have been a big no-no and turn-off, but I'd got drunk with my roommate one night, and he dared me to write something outside of my normal science fiction genre to see if I could do any better. I'd made him pick a category off of Amazon, and paranormal romance became my new life. It seriously took off to where I could afford to move out of the shared two-bedroom apartment. The reason I didn't was because my portion of the rent and utilities was $350 a month. I'd had plenty of months before things took off where I ate ramen or rice and beans because money was so tight my pennies were screaming. I pinched them so hard. I looked around my office. My futon sat on the right, my desk and chair to the left, and two bookshelves and a small TV stand finished off everything. I didn't have a dresser. I kept everything in sliding totes under my futon because I liked the small space, the bare minimum. White walls were covered by video game and movie posters. It was both my sanctuary and my prison. Within this 10 by 15 foot space, I could write entire novels at a speed that alarmed critics and made me a livable income. Other than making food, using the restroom and using the living room on a rare occasion, these four walls comforted me. If I went to the doctors, they'd probably say I was agoraphobic, the fear of crowds, or that I was so introverted I gave myself anxiety about being around folks. The truth was, I liked being by myself. It could be sometimes lonely, but it wasn't the worst way to live. Still, even my roommate was more than I could handle socially at times, and I'd pack my sleeping bag, a small pop-up tent, and some gear, and go camping in the rough on state land when I'd had enough of adulting around people. "Hey, Rick," my roommate Al said, knocking on the door. "Come on in, man," I called, pulling off my headphones and standing up. "You got any jumper cables? My old man called and he can't find his." "Sure, in my van." "What are you jumping?" I asked him. "His old motorhome. He's going to try to sell it." "Sure," I told him, standing up. "I don't know if my van will jump it or not, though. It's got to have a huge motor." "No, man, it's like a Chevy big block," my younger and more stoner-like roommate was saying. We'd met at a Starbucks. I'd been surfing for a place to rent, just as he'd posted to a Facebook group page I was following, alerting me to a new post. I was in one of my rare in-public moods where, instead of changing out of my night pajamas into my day pajamas, I put on real clothes to get a double shot of espresso. As I was walking out, I recognized Al was the guy who had just posted the link, and we started talking. Something I rarely do. Talk to strangers, that is. "Oh, well, you need me to help you come jump it?" I asked him. "If you want to. Probably going to use Dad's truck, though." "Sure. Let me change and I'll meet you downstairs." He left, and I changed. I knew I was breaking my own personal rule about adulting before writing, but Al's dad and Al himself had been an awesome family to get to know. After my parents and grandparents passed away, I sort of withdrew into myself. The last 2 years I'd spent here, I'd slowly gotten to know them. Not enough to call them bestest of friends, but they tried and probably would call me a friend if I asked. They tried to include me, and more than once I woke up with a sore head because the two of them would try to get me to be more social and out of my shell. That's what happened when I took on Al's dare and started writing paranormal romance, or PNR. So I owed it to them, and Al didn't really try too hard to break me out of my habits. I pulled my van keys off the hook of my bedroom door and headed downstairs. "Crank it again," I called. Alberto Sr. did, and I heard the big block slowly turn over. It finally caught, and the motor started running. It was a little choppy at first, but he goosed the gas and revved it up. When he let off on the pedal, it was running smoothly. I disconnected the cables and put them in my van, and then closed both hoods. "Thanks," Al Sr. said as I stepped into the side door. "No problem. Where did Al go?" I asked. "I think he snuck around the back of the house to have a smoke. He doesn't know I know, but I'm his dad. Plus, I can smell it on him." "Probably ashamed. He's been trying to quit for a couple of months now," I admitted.
"Really? Huh. I guess I can't fault him for that."
"So this is pretty cool. You take this all over?" I asked, stepping all the way in to get a look at the living room area that the door opened up into.
"I used to, before Jerry died. It's just been sitting here, and, well, I don't know if I want to go on long trips without her."
That I understood. My dad had loved hunting, but when the car accident killed him and my mom when I was a teen, sending me to live with my grandparents,
I had given up hunting. It hadn't felt the same with them gone. Al's wife had passed probably 5 years prior, according to my roommate. So this thing had been sitting a while.
Short trips, then?
I asked him.
Nah, I'm just gonna put up for a sale sign on this old thing. If nobody wants it, I'll drive it to the scrapyard.
Now, I'm sure I mentioned I love camping. I do, but it's mostly being alone and self-contained that I really loved more. Just being able to walk out into the middle of nowhere had its appeal. But if I could also bring my laptop and music and...
Go ahead and look around, Al said, seeing me eyeballing the interior. I've had it cleaned out for a while.
I looked at the interior in a new light. Coming to my right was the living room area with a couch that looked like it folded into a bed. Two captain chairs were at the dash, with overhead storage that started there and ran down the driver's side of the motorhome and over a bench and table setup. To my immediate left was a cupboard with a sink, a cooktop, a set of drawers, and then a tall fridge. I took a step closer and looked. Surface rust pitted the metal surface of the cooktop, but not from damage, more like long disuse. I scratched at it with a fingernail and looked out the small window over the sink before turning toward the back. Where the table ended, a tall pantry cupboard stood next to that. It created a hallway of sorts that led back to what I could see was a small bedroom in the back. I passed a shower stall to my left and a closed door on my right. When I opened it, I found a small toilet and bathroom sink on that side. I closed it and went back into the bedroom area. A small dresser was in the middle of the back wall, under the windows with a single bed on either side. Storage was all overhead in here as well, with a small TV bolted to a mount and pushed onto the left side were bunks out of the way.
What do you think? Al Sr. said.
I startled. Over the sound of the rumbling gas motor, I hadn't heard him coming up behind me.
This is camping in style, I said, grinning. It is, or it was. Come here, let me show you more.
He must have sensed Chum in the water, because I never saw him circling. I fell in love with the idea of having a mobile office where I could get away, recover from my introvert hangover, and still work. It was enticing. He showed me that under one of the bench seats was the charging system for the motorhome, then the furnace in the bottom of the tall pantry cabinet, and where the house batteries were installed, and how to operate the heaters and air conditioners that were built into the roof. He hadn't safety checked the propane system, but said when he checked the gauge, it still had pressure and propane in the system, so he fired up the stovetop. It took about a minute till the air was out of the lines, but it lit. He adjusted the flame up and down till he was satisfied, then turned it off.
Fridge can run off electric or propane, too. Got an automatic switch on it. As long as your house batteries have juice, that is. One of the upgrades me and Jer did. She had to have a nice big fridge. I can't say I blame her.
Wow, this thing. It's amazing. I looked around, seeing the possibilities.
Want it?
This concludes another episode of the Book Speaks podcast, where the book speaks for itself. Thanks for joining me, your host, Benjamin Douglas, for another indie author reading. If you liked what you heard, be sure to visit http://thebookspeakspodcast.wordpress.com for more episodes and for links to the author's website and the author's Amazon author page in the show notes. If you'd like to follow me on my own author journey, you can find me at http://benjamindouglasbooks.wordpress.com. And of course, if you're an indie author interested in having your work featured on the show, or if you're interested in discussing having your book read and produced by me as an audiobook, feel free to contact me at benjamindouglasbooks@gmail.com. Thanks for joining me today. I hope you have a productive and enjoyable weekend.